music is absolutely first. It's not how you look or how you dress or whatever, or how much money you make or what your job is. It's the music. It's not how you're connected, who you know, like what clique you're in. You can go into a club and not know who they are, and if they blow you away, that band is going to do well. And I think sometimes that's, you know, overlooked. That's the first thing you got to have in a band, is you got to have good songs.
I'm Joni Deutsch, and from WFAE in Charlotte, this is Amplifier, the music podcast where we shine a light on the Charlotte music scene. Because Charlotte is more than just a banking city or a football city. So each weekday during the month of September, we're going to explore the people, places, and things that help define the Queen City's crown sound. And today, a Charlotte punk rock band who brings people together by tearing down expectations and tearing up the stage. That's coming up on Amplifier.
Amplifier. And then the beat will drop.
Amplifier.
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 Can you introduce yourselves and what you do in music?
I'll go first. My name is Mike Benson, and I've been in Charlotte for a long time. Current band is Trash Room, and we're like pretty much a heavy punk rock, metal influenced band, and I play guitar, and I'm the songwriter also.
My name is Amber, and I write the lyrics and sing for Trash Room.
And are you both originally from the Charlotte area? I mean, like, actually,
I am.
I'm born and raised.
I was born and raised in Matthews, which is where I still live, but not the same place. But yeah, I mean, I moved away. Did different things, went to college, you know, found jobs other places, and eventually came back to start a family.
I'm from St. Petersburg, Florida, but have lived in Charlotte longer than I did in St. Pete, so I consider it hometown.
Now, you guys are obviously, like you mentioned, you're part of Trash Room, and the band really takes seeds from that DIY punk scene of the 70s. And I'm wondering, what was your first experience with that sound?
For me, it was punk rock. I mean, just like growing up in the 80s, listening to the Dead Kennedys and Minor Threat and Black Flag and, you know, wishing I could go see those bands because I was 10 and I couldn't. So as a child, I always loved, like, the fastest, hardest music I could find. It was before metal was really a thing. I mean, it was underground at the time. You couldn't really find it anywhere. But I started off going down to Record Bar down at South Park Mall years and years ago and buying records there and just finding whatever was available. And you know, Tipper Gore and all that stuff. It was like, it was a free-for-all. So we just go down there and pick up your records and hide it from your parents, and that's how you get started. Pick up a guitar, plug it in, and that's it.
I would definitely say music has always been in my family. Like, I just grew up around it. We, you know, my dad, uncles, everybody all played guitar, and that's just how we communicated with one another. So we always had records in the house, but I definitely, you know, my first concert was like Mudhoney and Gas Huffer, and they were... I mean, seeing something live versus listening to it is a whole cathartic experience. So it's I think I would call it my church. So I always turn to music when I
you've got
need
a very,
some saving.
You've got a really wide variety of influences, too. Probably a lot more than me. I mean, I would say you listen to all kinds of stuff that I've never even
PJ Harvey, Sonic Youth, like the Riot Girl movement, all of that kind of stuff definitely influenced me.
So tell me your first experience in a band. I know it wasn't Trash Room.
No, it wasn't.
So tell me, how was that? What age were you that you got to really be on stage and rock out?
Well, my first real band was probably when I was 16. It didn't really go anywhere. We just jammed in a warehouse, and we didn't even really have a name. You know, we kind of like had whoever could come by and play drums, and it was me and my friend Steve, and we had our cassette recorders, and we would write songs, and it was ridiculous but hilarious but fun, you know. And I would listen to it on my Walkman like over and over again. Like, that was, I was obsessed with it. And then camcorders came out, so we started recording ourselves, practicing. And I wish I still had that stuff because it was ridiculous.
That would have been great.
But yeah, I was a teenager, and I always wanted to do it. And I think my first show as a real band member was at the Milestone when I was 18, probably back in like 1988 or 89. And, you know, I just loved it. I couldn't get enough of it. I was too young to go there for the most part of my life when I was here in Charlotte. But when I came back, I was all excited about coming back, and the Milestone was still there. And, you know, that. So my first experience in a band was a really young teenager, probably.
And Amber, what about you?
I would say that I was a super music fan for a very long time and never ever thought about being in a band. And a good friend of mine was just approached me and was just like, hey, you write really good poetry. Like, I had a blog, and he's like, you like good music. I think you should come to band practice and just see how you feel about it. And I did. So it was a very natural. I just wound up like starting to write lyrics and just started playing with them. And that was Consumption Casualties. And that was here in Charlotte. Sean McLeod was started that, and he's actually a professor at, actually, he's Dr. McLeod at
Dr.
UNC
Sean.
Charlotte, yeah, religious studies. He wrote a book. He's pretty awesome. So he's the one who approached me about joining, and my ex-husband played bass in the band, so it made it complicated when we separated.
Yeah, say no more.
Yeah, it's really complicated when you're in a band with your significant other because, you know, like, I'm married to the bass player, so... If the band breaks up, that could be a problem for our marriage, or if the marriage breaks up.
I like how you said if the band breaks up.
The band is in trouble, you know what I mean? So, like, that's always something
to
worry about.
Luckily, you guys are, like, bulletproof.
Yeah, we are, for the most part. And, you know, it's funny that, Amber, that you mentioned that, the poetry, because that's actually why we recruited Amber, because our bands had played together, the previous bands I was in, and I'd seen her perform, and I was like, she's really great. I would love to be in a band with her, but I didn't really know her. And of course, you know, I felt weird because she was married to the bass player. I don't want to go in there and give anybody the wrong idea. So, like, my wife and I were thinking about, who are we going to sing for Trash Room? Who's going to sing? Who's going to be the vocalist? We got to find somebody that can just stand up front, because I'm not a vocalist. I can't sing. Angela didn't want to do it. So we're like, I think I got some ideas. So I went around and I found Amber's blog, which I hadn't seen in a while. And I saw some new stuff on it. I'm like, hey, you know, I just sent her a message. I'm like, do you want to sing for us? She's like, yeah. And it was that easy. So, I mean, it's good to have people that have other influences that are doing other things, because that kind of art form really was a big thing to me. Like, she's very prolific. And the vocals, I mean, I could hear those as song lyrics. Like, I could hear the poetry over the guitar riffs and say, that would be a song. So that's how we got her. Yeah.
Well, when did the band actually officially start as Trash Room?
Probably, I think, January of last year. 2017 is when we were officially a band. Angela and I had been thinking about it for a few months, but it came together really quickly. We had someone else starting out on drums, didn't really work out. Then I remember my friend Travis, who I thought would be a perfect addition. So we got him recruited, and then, like, pretty quickly we had a set of material. So we only have, like, about 10 songs that we play live, and we've got 8 of those recorded. So in a year, we actually got a lot done. I was pretty surprised. But it hasn't been very long, but we played a ton of shows, and we're very active. So it's been a very action-packed year. Yeah, I know. I mean, I've done more in this band in a year than I've done in other bands in, like, 5 or 6.
Really?
Yeah.
And why is that?
I think that we're all super motivated and we're all responsible. And, you know, Amber knows people we don't know. So she brought a whole group of people in that would listen to us that probably would never give us a second chance. And I think being, like, you know, we're all in our 40s now, and we've seen a lot and we've done a lot in our lives, and we don't have a lot of time to mess around. So we're like, if we're going to do it, let's just do it and get it done and, like, not mess around. And so I think that was the motivation for it, is not having a lot of free time, because we all have jobs and careers and children and stuff. But punk rock is always, like, my main priority. So if I can get that band going, then everything else is fine. If I'm in a band, I'm fine. So
what did the name Trash Room come from?
Well, it started out kind of as a joke, actually, because my wife and I saw the sign that, you know, in a condo says Trash Room on it. It's like, the sign is basically our logo for our band. We just took a picture of it. And I was like, that would be hilarious. And so I texted her. I was like, let's call our band Trash Room. She's like, okay. And we're like, yeah, this is funny. It's never going to go anywhere. And then, because it's ridiculous. It's a dumb name. But no one else was using it. We looked all around Facebook, social media, Twitter, everywhere, which I thought, by the way, I still don't get Twitter. We looked everywhere and no one was using it. I was like, this can't be right. There's got to be a band out there called Trash Room. And there wasn't. So I'm like, well, I guess we'll just use that because it's available and people remember it because no one else is called that. So when we got Amber in the band, I was like, hey, you know, we don't have to keep the name Trash Room. We can change the name. She's like, no, it's fine. And I was like, okay.
You seem pretty comfortable with it.
I thought it was fine. You know, it kind of fit in my personality of, like, not taking it too seriously. And it's just kind of like, but it's got a very punk rock feel to it to me. So I kind of really kind of summed up those two things pretty well.
And when creating the record, which was your debut full length last year, Whiskey and Bad Decisions. I can hear you come with how long did that process really take between, you know, singing, songwriting, and then the recording of it in studio?
We recorded in July.
We did the whole thing in one day. And
one day?
Yeah.
The entire 8-song record?
Yeah, not the mixing, but the recording. Yeah, we went to Dead Peasant Studio, which is Brandon Hamby up in Elkin, and he did a great job. So overall, I mean, we probably got it all together in about 6 months, I'd say, something like that, from start to finish, which I know was crazy. But I mean, really, it was the process really worked well for us because we had a lot of songs sitting around that weren't being used. And Angela and I just went through all these riffs and just picked out the ones that we thought were the best and that would work for this band. And then, of course, if, you know, one of the other members of the band didn't like it, we'd ditch it. You know, I've got a lot of riffs. I don't have time to waste on just like writing bad songs. So, yeah, so Amber would come in and if we'd get a feel for it. And then, you know, she's very much a part of the process. Once we got in the room, it was very much a collaborative effort. It got a lot louder really fast because Travis hits really hard. And it just, so the amps got louder and the volume got louder and the vocals got more in your face. And it just became like a really fun band to be in really quickly. But yeah, I mean, less than a year later, we had a record and it was out and done. And we just took the songs that we had from Brandon and got them mastered here with Dave Harris, Studio B. He did a phenomenal job on them and it just turned into it. We got some CDs pressed pretty quickly. Yeah, got it distributed through CD Baby, got it on all the Spotify and all the other outlets. So, I mean, you know, these things weren't possible 10 years ago or even 15 years ago when we were first starting out in bands and stuff. And now the process is really compacted, especially being able to record all the songs in one day. I mean, that just made it really fast. So we got the whole thing done and like we spent a very little amount of money on it too.
Wow.
So it was great just to have these kind of resources. So it's been a lot of fun. It's been really, really fun.
In Four Whiskey and Bad Decisions, I'm wondering if you can kind of take us through, maybe not necessarily track by track, but a kind of flow of what the record is in terms of lyrics and themes.
I'll let you take that one, Amber. I wrote the music, but you have the words.
Oh, that's a good question.
That's really good. Should have thought of that before I came in here.
I think that a lot of it is just, you know, your daily frustrations in society. And some of it could be from my, you know, perspective as a woman. But also just people who, I mean, really, I think anyone can relate to it, quite frankly. And it's also about, I think, a lot of fun, too. I mean, like, Whiskey and Bad Decisions is just, this, you know, the title song. That's the one we kind of, I think, all got in the room together and did pretty easily. I think we all feel that way sometimes, where we just want to say, I'm tired of society and how it's, like, crushing my soul, and you want to escape, you know, and find something to kind of ease that pain. So, I mean, Fold Your Hands is definitely more of a in your face. Like, I work in a field where there's a lot of older white males who sometimes make me feel like I need to raise my voice a little bit louder or prove myself a little bit more. So that, you know, I think I definitely delved into that.
Fold Your Hands is the song that I was actually going to bring up specifically in a bit, because that might be my favorite one from
yeah.
the record.
It's our favorite. It's like the crowd favorite. Like, we always close with that. And we've talked about it before, because we're all like, we can probably never, ever play a show where we don't close with that song.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, we, like, you can feel the energy build between us, and then the crowd just gets into it, and it's definitely probably one of my favorite songs.
It's a lot of fun to play. A lot of fun. And I think that, for me, the fun part is the contrast. I mean, it starts with this stupid little guitar intro that I just made up in like 2 seconds. I'm like, ha, let's play this. And people were like, okay. I'd be like, that's not a real intro. It sounds ridiculous. So then, but then it starts into a really heavy part. For me, that's kind of a great way to sort of symbolize the whole band. There's a lot of kind of ridiculous, funny things, but it's also kind of heavy in other aspects.
One of the other songs from Whiskey and Bad Decisions that I want to bring up is the song Silence Equals Defeat, which recently was placed in a compilation titled Never Illegal, which has some interesting ties to both the Charlotte music scene and also the Dresden Dolls' Amanda Palmer. So I'm wondering if you can kind of give us the tale behind that song and that inclusion of it in the compilation.
Well, that was definitely written during our election.
You're talking about the presidential election.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, just that feeling of, I think, powerlessness. Like I think I felt at the time, and just how you can't just be quiet and take, you know, what's going on around us, the injustices, and that there's a way that we have to, you know, stay together as a community and speak out for those who aren't speaking for themselves and get the message across that we don't want to take that kind of behavior. So it was, I think it was definitely geared towards that, and just things that were going on around me that I felt completely uncontrolled. Like at the time, I felt like I had no control over the situation. And so it kind of gave me, I don't know, like almost like an anthem or, you know, something that I could relate to that just made me feel better about the situation. And music is powerful. I think there's no way that we can, you know, say that it's not powerful. It bands so many of us together, and it just seemed like a natural fit when Laura said she was going to put that compilation together. I was like, this was completely written for all of that.
Yeah.
And she read the lyrics, and she's like, yes, please. And so, yeah, that's what that was about.
And this is Laura...
Americo.
Laura Americo.
Mm-hmm.
And Laura Americo is a Charlotte native, a singer-songwriter, rocker. And she's the one that put together the compilation Never Illegal, which I guess through some sort of weaving of connections, reached out to Amanda Palmer to be able to contribute a song to the compilation.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome that she's on there.
Yeah.
I'm a huge Amanda Palmer fan, yeah.
Especially for, I mean, this is a song, you know, Silence Equals Defeat from your debut full length less than a year ago that's on this with Amanda Palmer, which I feel like is a nice way to kind of start off saying you stand for something and also you have the ability to play it really well.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a great song, and it's one of our first songs that we wrote for this band, and it was originally written for another band that my wife and I tried to be in together 15 years ago, and it just all came together really well. So, like, it's got a great story behind it for us. I won't go into all the boring details. So, yeah, I mean, and so now I thought it would be great now that we're actually in a band together. Hopefully we will remain together now, and we have the song that's sort of like, you know, kind of flipping off our past selves, like y'all should have got it together a long time ago. So come on.
Coming up, Trash Room responds to HB2 and relives the golden age of punk music in Charlotte. That's right after this break on Amplifier. Hey, Amplifier friends. As you can tell by this series, Charlotte is home to a number of talented artists, from indie rockers to R&B producers, cinematic jazz singers to Latinx musicians, and beyond. If you're looking to explore the Charlotte music scene even further, then consider Amplifier your map. Just go to wfae.org/amplifier. There, you can find a 10-hour Spotify playlist of songs from Charlotte artists, as well as a roundup of Charlotte venues where you can find those artists live and in person. And if you play music in Charlotte, we even have a way for you to submit your tunes to be a part of Amplifier. That's all at wfae.org/amplifier. As you're bookmarking that website, let's get back to our interview. I'm wondering what it is about the punk movement, about punk music, that really draws you all in and makes you passionate to not only listen to it, but to perform it yourselves.
Well, I would say it's basically the f*** you attitude. I mean, that's it. That's all punk is right there. It's about seeing things around you that you don't like, or, you know, being picked on or whatever, and being like, you know, f*** you, I got my own thing. You know, I play music, and that's what I do.
I think when you go to see a punk show, too, it's very rare that you will see a cell phone out. You know, people are definitely in the moment.
Yeah.
And it's people of, like, all different, you know, coming from all different areas of life, like, together, appreciating this moment in time. Like, yeah. People are sweating. They're in it with you.
Exactly. They're in the pit. If there's a pit, they're in there. You can't take your cell phone in a pit. It'll be immediately destroyed. You know? I mean, so it is very much about being in the moment and, like, making those connections with people. And it's not just the negativity of saying, you know, we don't care what you think. There's a lot of positive things behind it too. But that to me is what drew me to it. And that's why I like to play it, because it's a very aggressive form of music. And most people don't get to do that in their daily lives. You know, it's not something that you have that kind of release that you can't really find anywhere else.
Also, just my voice can be loud and heard, where other days it's not necessarily so. I feel like I'm being talked over or not listened to. And
I can fold your hands.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
When it comes to Charlotte, the city where you guys are living and making music, I'm wondering where your music fits into the music landscape of the city. Would you say that you've been able to find a place or a home for it here?
It's been surprisingly easy. I mean, Charlotte is a great town for all kinds of music. And I mean, growing up here, it's funny because when I left for college, I said, I'll never come back here. This place is terrible. I hate it. Because there was really nothing to do. I mean, we called it downtown back then. You didn't go there. You just didn't go there.
And now it's called Uptown.
Now it's called Uptown. And there's actually stuff going on in the city. And people are actually, they want to live here now, which before we all just wanted to escape. But it's a great place. I mean, there's a lot of great people here that are very accepting of new bands. And since I was here, I knew some people. And it was kind of easier probably for most people than others to get into some of these clubs and get shows and stuff. But you got to work at it. I mean, you can't just, it's not just handed to you. But overall, as far as performing, we've had a lot of success with people just giving us chances and coming out, people that would never, you would never expect to come out to places like the Milestone, that, you know, they would come out and see you play because, you know, they know you from other parts of your life or something like that. But overall, it's a great city, and there's a lot of great people here that would just, they'll do anything to promote music and promote punk rock in particular.
And our bands, that our previous bands, we played together at Tommy's Pub, mm-hmm. which was on Central Avenue,
yep.
and got demolished with all the condos coming into town. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we were really excited to come back to the new Tommy's Pub and play with our new band. So,
yeah,
Jamie Starks is a great supporter of the music scene.
Yep.
Milestone. And we've also, you know, we got to go to Chapel Hill, play The Cave. Salisbury, there's a great place called Grievous Gallery that supports local music of all kinds. So there's a lot of people out there that want their communities to see the local talent. So I think we do have a lot of great support.
I guess that's one thing I do see with Charlotte music, is that for the most part, it is an independent music scene. There's not a lot of record labels here, promotional companies, anyone to make it kind of commercialized. So because of that, all these artists from all these different genres are having to be their own advocates, their own managers, marketers, performers. And because of that, there's a lot of creative freedom. So I'd almost say that the DIY punk scene, it has a role here because everyone is following that same kind of anti-commercial way of making and creating music.
Yeah, and in fact, we play places that you can't play covers. They won't let you play them there if you're a cover band. You
really?
Can't. Oh, yeah. You can't play as cover bands. They don't want you. So there's a lot of places that they're putting it on the line. Like, those are the bands that, like, make the money, that will bring in customers. We play the places where the people are dedicated to music as music first, and then they'll pay the bills somehow. You know, that's how it works. So that's what we're attracted to. Very much a DIY, independent spirit. There's nobody telling us what to do or what to say. We can play songs we can't play anywhere else at these places. If we were to go to some of these breweries or whatever and break into our set, we'd be immediately arrested. You know, we joke about it all the time. Like, oh, there's a show at this place. Let's go down to this new brewery in town and Noda, and let's bring our amps and set up, see what happens. They'd call the cops immediately. Like, what are you doing here? You're not welcome here. So we go places where they want you to be there. We go there in the middle of the night and play these loud.
Or it can be loud, and
it can be loud
curse and, like a sailor.
Yeah, exactly. It's rough. It's dirty. It's a lot of ways dangerous, but it's great. That's what I love about the Charlotte music scene.
During the HB2, mm-hmm. the bathroom bill.
Yes.
You know, a lot of artists came out saying, we're not going to perform in Charlotte. We're not going to perform anywhere around this because we don't agree with the ideology behind it. But one of the artists that actually said he was still going to travel through and speak and make music in a way was Black Flag's Henry Rollins. Mm-hmm. And there's a quote that he said, and I'll just repeat it. "I want North Carolina to reap an LGBT whirlwind. More shows, more light, more heat, more volume, just more." And I'm wondering if you guys have a response to that or what your thinking is with that in mind.
No, I think you have to, like, be heard. Like, just ignoring the fact and skipping us as a city doesn't make anyone see the difference. And if you're using your platform to get your point across, and if your fans, like, appreciate you and what you're after, and you say, hey, this is wrong, you should not support, you know, this, then I think it's more a way to make a change than to just skip us. Like, what does that do? That just punishes the people who want to see you, and it won't change anybody's mind for anything.
Yeah.
So I appreciated a lot of bands did that. Like, Garbage was one of them. Like, I think Shirley Manson was great. I saw her at the Fillmore, and she, you know, said everyone was bringing that up, you know. We were, you know, a lot of people told us not to come, or we weren't going to come because of this, and no, like, it needs to be heard. So I appreciate that they stopped through the town.
Well, yeah. What you have to remember is there's a lot of young people out there watching, and they're paying attention to what we do. And they don't necessarily have a platform or a voice either. So if they see that we're ignoring it or letting it get them get away with it, then they're going to just be like, oh, that's just normal. But, you know, if they say, wait a minute, these bands are protesting it, or, you know, they're actually they care about these things, then, you know, that's something that they're going to take with them when they're old enough to vote.
As you're making music as the band Trash Room, I'm wondering if you are, of course, you're making music for yourselves, but I'm wondering if you're wanting to inspire that next generation of sorts of punk rockers, and if you're seeing them kind of come in through the Charlotte music scene at a young age and eventually becoming what you guys are today.
Absolutely. I mean, it's really important to inspire people, especially now when there's so many different forms of music out there that are available instantly. You know, you don't have to go to a record store. You don't have to go, you know, wait for the record to come out somewhere and go buy. I mean, there's stuff available for all kinds of music, like, right now. So our kids are definitely, like, my wife and I, our kids are just, they listen to whatever's available. And so for us, it's a matter of instilling appreciation of quality music, no matter what the genre is. I mean, we don't care about that. You know, as long as it's not, like, horrible or inappropriate in certain ways, we want to make sure they have the freedom to listen to what they want to, whether it's punk rock or not. So that's really important. But I do think the music itself is pretty timeless. I mean, you can go back and listen to some of these old 70s recordings that technically the production is terrible, but it doesn't matter. It's the message and the energy that count. And that's what we're trying to pass along. You know, like, just be excited about it. You know, don't just sit there and listen and consume all the time. Go out and do something creative. So that's what I hope our kids get out of all this, because they're, you know, of course, mortified that we're in a band because, you know, they're teenagers. And no matter what we do, it's not cool. So as long as they can pass that and, you know, they come out the other end and say, well, wait a minute, you know, our parents were actually active in the music scene, and maybe they'll do something creative too.
They'll appreciate it later.
I hope so.
I guarantee it they will.
I hope so.
They're going to say, like, my dad and mom are rock stars.
Yeah.
But only when they're about your age. Like, yeah. When they're 40, they're going to be like, yeah, my parents are really cool. But until then.
Right. Now we're idiots. You know, we're terrible. And, you know, we're the worst. So it doesn't matter.
And also just playing shows and having people come up to us. Like, you know, I've had young, like, girls come up to me and getting really excited about that, you know, that they see me up there. And so that definitely inspires me to keep, you know, I guess, making my voice heard for sure.
On that note, I do wonder what you hope happens next to the Charlotte music scene, where more bands like yourself or other genres can feel like they're adequately supported.
Yeah, I hope that our venues stop closing, for one.
Yeah.
Do not stop supporting live shows. Like, I know you're tired by the end of the day. There's probably a million other things you want to do or can't do, but I mean, that's probably the number one driving force, like, is going to see a live band, supporting the community that you're in, because, I mean, without those venues to play and without the people there to see us, we're really nothing, so.
Yeah, and I would say that just take a chance, you know, because sometimes you'll find something that you're going to love and you may not. I mean, I'll be honest, most of the bands we go see, you know, they're good bands, but we've been around a long time, so we've seen a lot of different bands. So every once in a while, though, we'll see something we didn't expect, like some band of young kids is, like, blowing us away. And that is worth it. just to go out and take a chance.
Pay a cover charge and like get your mind completely blown. Like instead of spending what, like $50 for a Ticketmaster ticket.
Right. And there may be ten people in the crowd watching and like half of them are like with the band or
whatever. And we played Freeman's Pub in Gastonia and that place, talk about some spirit. Like the people there love live music. Like and we had people tell us at the end of the night, we were getting ready to leave and you guys started and like they were just completely blown away and glad they stayed. So
yeah, usually we drive people out. Like we turn up and they're like, nope.
Nope.
And we've had people say like, you guys are really loud. And then we'll say, okay. And then we'll say, but yeah, you were pretty tight. And like, all right. And then one guy said one time, well, no one really liked you, but you guys were pretty good. And he meant it as a compliment. And I was like, okay, I mean, that's fine. I mean, thanks for your honesty. I mean, we don't care if you like us or not. We still did the show and there's nothing you can do about it. So we're used to seeing all kinds of responses. I mean, you know, growing up in the South in the 80s and stuff, playing in bars and stuff. I mean, I'm used to having like full cans of beer thrown at me. So if I'm not getting pelted by alcohol by drunken bikers, then I'm good. I can handle anybody else.
Your threshold's like low.
Oh, yeah.
Your bar.
My expectations are very low.
Mike, you've been in Charlotte for a good while.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering, through all the years that you've been here, has there been a golden age to DIY punk in Charlotte? And if there hasn't been, is that on the horizon or is that currently happening right now?
I would say, well, okay, I will say there was a golden age in the 80s. It wasn't even the Milestone. It was across the street from the Milestone, the Church of Musical Awareness, which doesn't even exist anymore. But the fact that there was always people there and like you could go as an underage kid and you could see like the Goo Goo Dolls before they were famous, or you could see SNFU or whoever else came through. I mean, these are bigger bands. So that was a lot of fun. I think that was, for me, probably my peak as far as like seeing bands no one's heard of before, because that was before the internet, you know, and that was, for me, a lot of fun. That was special. Or you see like Operation Ivy down at some random strip mall somewhere, or, you know, you see like the guys from Black Flag at a record store doing an in-store performance. You can't do that anymore. So like that was, to me, like very much a golden age for punk rock in general. But I mean, there's definitely a revival going on. And when I moved back to Charlotte, it was been like 15 years ago, I was struck right away at how much support local bands were getting, because it wasn't always like that. And in the 80s, there was also a huge problem with like skinheads coming in and wrecking shows. So you couldn't go to the Milestone for a while without getting in a fight or getting, you know, basically harassed or whatever. And it was a real thing. So there was a really dark period too. But I think we've come around to a very exciting part of, I don't know, music history that I think people will look back on now. And it's because there's bands of all ages and all genres coming together, and it's like such a supportive community. It's not competitive. It's not petty or superficial. I mean, people love music. So I would say that right now we're really emerging as a city of great bands and great, you know, supporters of local music. And it's still kind of underground in a way, but honestly, you know, I never really wanted to be popular or well-known. I wanted to play the music I wanted to play, and we have those kinds of outlets here, which you don't have a lot of places. So I think people, whether they know it or not, they understand how great, they will at some point, how great Charlotte is for music.
I'm sure that we have a number of listeners right now who, they know of punk music, they might know of your band, but maybe there needs to be a little motivation to be able to encourage them to come out and listen to punk music compared to typical hard rock or classic rock or indie rock. So I'm wondering if having this platform right now of being the advocate to say why they should listen and just taste punk music, what would you say?
It's really fun. I mean, it's really fun. And you're not going to see it anywhere else. I mean, you're not going to go to a sports bar and see a band like destroying their equipment or shouting about, you know, whoever's in office. You're just not going to see that. It's freedom and it's fun and it's just, there really aren't any rules. I mean, you don't know what you're going to get. It's the surprise and the experience of feeling like, I feel like I'm really in the moment right now. I feel like a young person again. You know, and it's funny because my wife has a lot of tennis friends. She plays tennis. And they'll come out to see us play every once in a while. And they're just blown away. They've never seen anything like it before. I mean, they come once. I mean, they're not going to come back. And I don't expect them to. I mean, why would they? But I mean, they've in that like half an hour, they've seen something they've never seen before. And they didn't even know that you could experience that in Charlotte. So I would say that's, for me, the reason. It's also just really, really fun.
Trash Room's latest release is titled Whiskey and Bad Decisions, available on trashroom.bandcamp.com and wherever fine music is streamed and sold. Amplifier is a production of WFAE. This episode was written and produced by me, Joni Deutsch. Our associate producer is Cole Del Charco. Our editors are Greg Collard and Jadon Marshall. Our theme music is provided by Dirty Art Club. You can share your favorite Charlotte music recommendations right now on social media. Just follow and tag me. I'm at A Change of Tune. New episodes of Amplifier drop each weekday this September, so make sure to subscribe to the Amplifier podcast on Apple Podcasts, NPR One, and wherever you find podcasts. For more Charlotte music chats, including playlists and even a Charlotte music map, visit wfae.org/amplifier. Until next time, I'm Joni Deutsch. Thanks for listening.